In January of this year, Russia dominated international headlines. We were yet to hear about troops gathered on the borders of Crimea or Ukraine. The coverage was then all about whether the seaside resort town of Sochi was ready to host the Winter Olympics. Less than 6 months after the world descended on Sochi, those newly built streets, hotels, and arenas stand empty. Sochi is a $51 billion ghost town. From Athens to Beijing to Lake Placid, photographer John Pack and filmmaker Gary Hustwit have been documenting what happens after the Olympic hullabaloo is over. Their photo book and ongoing project is called The Olympic City. John Pack, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
And Gary Hustwit, great to have you with us.
Thanks.
Now, Gary, seeing reports of Russia struggling to make use of Sochi now that the Games are over, I wonder if that's a trend you found as you revisited cities around the world for this project.
Yeah, well, there's always this, conflict between short-term, a flash of having the games and the kind of long-term planning and long-term benefits of the people who actually live in these cities. So it's something that we've seen certain cities have handled better than others. And, the jury is still out on Sochi. It has all the earmarks of, I think, a failure in terms of long-term usability and feasibility. I mean, I think they really just wanted to have a 2-week party and kind of be the center of the world for that time, and weren't really thinking about what was going to happen afterwards.
Yeah, really expensive party. You went as far back as the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. What's left of the facilities there?
Well, the Olympic Stadium that the famously Hitler built and is featured in the Leni Riefenstahl films is still an active football stadium. It's very much in use, and as are the surrounding areas. I think the most interesting thing in Berlin from the 36 games is the Olympic Village, which ended up in kind of East Berlin after the war and was then used by the Russian army as a base. And after the Berlin Wall fell and the Russian troops withdrew, it's just been kind of a ghost town for the past 20, 30 years. It's pretty amazing to see the pool and all these training facilities are there, but it's just covered in graffiti and just completely abandoned.
Right. I think there's always been talk of, should we tear the stadium down? We don't want to remember this history. But I think they just haven't. They've sort of been in this limbo for years and years.
Well, Gary, the modern Olympics started in 1896. How far back does this tradition of building extravagant facilities go?
Wow, even those early Olympics like Amsterdam and things like that in the early teens were building stadiums. I think the city that first purpose-built an Olympic Village was actually Los Angeles in 1932. They built an entire kind of, these little clapboard houses that, housed all the athletes and officials what now is the Baldwin Park neighborhood of L.A., and afterwards, they auctioned them off, and people kind of took these little structures and, used them as sheds and things like that. So there's no actual trace of the Olympic Village from 32 in Los Angeles. But, all these cities, I think, have tried to put their best face forward because they know that the world is watching. And I think it's interesting that the kind of architecture that comes out of the Olympic development is always this a city trying to kind of personify itself in the structures and show themselves to the world in this ideal self-image that they have.
Maybe one of the most disturbing Olympic venues to fall into disrepair, according to your photographs, is Athens, perhaps because of its history, also because the Summer Games were only 10 years ago. John, I wonder if you can paint us a picture of what it looks like now.
When I visited there, 21 of the 22 venues were fenced off, and guarded.
Fenced off and guarded?
Yeah, I mean, I think they even passed a bill, that required press to get permission to visit these sites because it was such, I think it's because it's such an embarrassment. And they don't really have the money to maintain these sites.
There's a photograph of one of the stadiums with just grass, you know, and weeds growing in the middle of the green.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly nature takes over if you don't maintain it. Especially when you build an 80,000 seat venue, you know, what are you going to do with that after? If you don't have a football team, a soccer team to go in there, then you have to maintain this gigantic stadium that you use a few times for concerts or something.
I think a lot of times the cities are like, if we build it, you know, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some use or business to come in and sponsor these places or sports teams. But
I think everyone gets caught up in it too. So there's, you know, I think they have a lot of people and companies saying, oh yeah, we'll definitely be interested in renting these spaces or in Athens malls were supposed to come in, you know, shopping malls and all sorts of things. And now I don't think any of it really came together.
Again, I think they see it as a big PR stunt. I mean, who knew even what Sochi was before last year?
Right.
No one did. And I think a lot of people didn't even really have a real image of Beijing until those games. And now the Bird's Nest and that opening ceremony is just, you know, in everyone's head. So in a certain sense, they accomplished what they wanted to. They weren't going after long-term, you know, livability improvements in those cities, so that they got what they wanted.
John Pack, the photographer, and filmmaker Gary Hustwit is with us. We're talking about a project that they're doing. They're documenting Olympic cities after the Olympics have passed on. Are there any examples of arenas or villages being used? You mentioned some of the villages have turned into housing, but had some sort of what they call adaptive reuse now in urban renewal circles that have helped sustain the positive impact of hosting an Olympics?
Well, I think that there's a couple pretty interesting examples. John photographed Lake Placid, and I think they've got one of the best after uses of their Olympic village.
Well, I mean, they didn't have the money to bring the Olympics in 1980, and they asked the government for money, and they said, we don't do that unless you make something federal that we can use afterwards. So they decided to make a prison where they already had a prison. So they've got a bunch of money from the federal government to build a federal prison. They housed the athletes in the prison for the games, and then afterwards they moved the prisoners back in. And the prisoners from the other jail actually helped, you know, build the trails and things for the Olympics. So it's a very interesting reuse for that.
John,
I don't know, positive is the word.
Yeah, good point. But it strikes me, John, these pictures, you know, they often look so sort of haunted in their own way. And aside from what they were used for in the past, what is it about photographing abandoned places that makes them so good, such good subjects?
Yeah, I don't know. Gary, you try it. Let me think about it.
Well, I think it's always striking to see, you know, especially in the case of the Olympic venues, you know, these structures that were built with this, I don't know, well, a very kind of idealistic idea of sport and of nations coming together, and they're very kind of celebratory. But after the party's over, you know, they just take on this a different quality almost immediately. There is a kind of a sense of the ghosts of what happened and how it kind of imprinted in the city. And it probably goes even deeper than the architecture. I think a lot of these places, like Sarajevo is a great example that John documented, that's part of the city's real and the citizens' kind of cultural identity. It's a point of pride that they hosted these games. And even something like Sarajevo is totally destroyed and, in the war and all these venues are just, were completely sort of bombed out. There's still this sense of everybody has an Olympic story there, and it is still part of the sort of DNA of the city. And it is kind of this positive thing that they carry.
So any plans to go to Russia soon and photograph Sochi, or is it still too soon?
I think it's a little too soon. I'm more interested in I think we're both interested in how it looks, you know, 2, 3, 4 years from now. The hangover hasn't gone away yet from the big party. So we want to see when things kind of return to kind of quote unquote normal. I think that's when it's probably the most interesting for us. But it is an ongoing project. I mean, we're going to keep going to cities. I know both of us are vying to try to go to Tokyo. because there's so much of the 64 Games legacy, but also how they're changing the city for the 2020 Games. We have an invitation to go to Rio de Janeiro and exhibit the photos later this year, and I think that's going to be fascinating to
see.
Well,
that'll stir some stuff up.
Yeah, well, how the World Cup fares there, but also just in the next couple of years in the run up to their game. So it's very much a conversation among people who live in these places, and it's something that we're excited to keep following.
Gary Hustwit, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And John Pack, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, you're welcome.
That's John Pack, the photographer, and Gary Hustwit, the filmmaker. Together, they are the creators of the Olympic City Project and Photo Book. You can see some photos at our website at wordofmouthradio.org.